I'm Senator Lindsay Port. I represent Senate District 55 in Burnsville and Savage, and I am the chair of the Senate Housing and Homelessness Prevention Committee.
Housing is a foundation on which we all build our lives. A safe place to come home to at the end of a day of school or work. A place where we build memories, do homework, and spend time with our loved ones. Homes are where we care for our children and our parents, where we rest and heal, where we dream and plan. Without stable housing, everything else can fall apart. As we are poised to make the largest investment in housing in state history, we're facing a crisis point right now. During the pandemic, emergency rental assistance kept people in their homes during challenging times. These programs have ended, but the gap between wages and the cost of housing has not closed, and too many Minnesotans cannot afford their homes. 25% of Minnesotans are paying at least 30% of their income for housing, and 22% of all renter households in Minnesota are paying 50% or more of their income. That's over 130,000 households. These numbers are unsustainable, and we have an opportunity to help close the gap. This week, Chair Howard and I have both passed a bill out of our committee for $50 million in emergency rental assistance through the Family Homelessness Prevention and Assistance Program. Senate File 1367 and House File 1440 would help to ensure that Minnesotans can stay in their homes while we are also doing the work to build more supply, close the homeownership gap, and end child homelessness. These funds are needed now, and we appreciate the support from our leadership to move these bills quickly through finance and to the floor. We have a bold agenda, and emergency rental assistance is one piece of the puzzle to make sure that we go big so Minnesotans can go home. I'd like to welcome Chair Howard.
Good morning. My name is Mike Howard, and I'm chair of the Housing Committee in the House. Housing is foundational. It's where we begin our morning, it's where we lay our head at night. But this foundation for our health, for our success, for our family's prosperity is out of reach and at risk for an increasingly number of Minnesotans. As Chair Port mentioned, over 500,000 Minnesotans are paying more for their housing than they can afford. Family homelessness is up over 200% over the last year. So evictions are skyrocketing to pre-pandemic levels, all while the collateral consequences mount for Minnesotans, for our state. At the same time, our state government simply has not made housing a priority. If our entire state general fund budget was a gallon jug of water, we would spend less than a tablespoon on housing. That is simply not going to cut it. It's time that we stop admiring the crisis before us and start proposing bold, visionary solutions that will actually meet the challenge that's facing Minnesotans. And that's what we're interested in today in the roadmap to solve Minnesota's housing crisis. This plan sets out big goals, but realistic and achievable goals, as long as we put our money where our mouth is and make the significant and sustained investments that are required. Investments that begin with a B. Our plan, this plan, will end children and youth homelessness by 2030 in Minnesota. This is a big goal, but it's achievable. And we do so in large part by ensuring every low-income family with children has access to a state-based housing voucher. This is a game changer in our work to end childhood poverty, a goal that we share with Governor Walz. Our plan will cut racial disparities in home ownership in half And our plan will supercharge our housing supply, building and preserving more than 150,000 homes in the next 10 years. I would close by saying there's something perverse about having a $17 billion surplus while Minnesotans are out in the cold, while evictions are spiking, while families are experiencing homelessness like never before. We have an opportunity, and I would say an obligation, to make long-term, strategic, ongoing investments that are so long overdue. Whether we're talking about closing opportunity gaps in our schools, increasing family prosperity, or increasing the bottom lines for families, all roads lead back to home. It's time that we make this the year where we go big and bold so that all Minnesotans can go home. And with that, I want to introduce Vice Chair Representative Igbaje.
Thank you and good morning. My name is Esther Igbaje. I represent a district in downtown and parts of North Minneapolis. So home ownership is one of the pathways to building generational wealth in this country. But getting there is harder to reach for more and more people. Whether it's rising costs, competition from corporate entities, more regular people and regular working families are finding it harder to purchase a home. And this is especially true for our Black, Indigenous, and people of color Minnesotans across the state. And because of these disparities, too many Minnesotans are left out of creating that generational wealth for their families. But this session, we have a number of ways through our first generation down payment assistance program, investments in the workforce home ownership program, and more investments in manufactured homes. We have ways that we can begin to close that gap. And this is why the significant resources that we are proposing today is necessary to ensure that home ownership is available for more people, and that those who have been left out of the process have a way in. And that is why we are unapologetic about the fact that some of our programs focus on ensuring that our Black and brown Minnesotans are the ones to receive that assistance and that investment. And so I look forward to future questions about that, but we're very excited to make sure that we are doing our part to rectify the harms that have been done in Minnesota. Thank you. And with that, I'll bring up Maeve Olson.
Hi, my name is Maeve Olson, and I work for Beacon Interfaith Housing Collaborative as an organizer for the Bring It Home Minnesota campaign. It's a campaign of over 30 organizations working together so that everyone can get the rent support that they deserve. State-funded housing vouchers, as mentioned here with Representative Howard and Senator Port, bring transformative, life-changing stability to families and individuals. Housing vouchers are proven to work. I personally know that this is true after seeing the impact that a subsidized housing voucher had on my family's life 20 years ago. Being the oldest of four children, I helped my mother move our family multiple times. We moved at least 10 separate times before I started high school, but eventually found long-term family stability in having a home paid for with a housing voucher. The adjustable monthly 30% rent payment based on a household's income was life-changing for our family and for my single mother who had to provide and care for four children while making less than $15,000 a year. Stable housing had a very real and tangible effect and impact on my younger siblings, especially allowing them to focus more on learning both technical and social skills like coding and critical thinking together, attending church and youth group volunteer events, completing college preparation applications and information, instead of worrying about where they're going to sleep at night or how to find a safe way to get home. So for the past decade or two, only one in four qualified Minnesotans who have applied for these voucher programs actually received one. That means that 75% of those who have applied for these programs and are qualified to receive them do not get them. And we already know that the wait list is extremely and exorbitantly long, and that's not okay. My family was very blessed, privileged, and fortunate enough to receive this transformative government assistance. Being a child beneficiary of this exact state funding through vouchers, I know and can prove that housing choice vouchers work. Also, being born and raised as a Minnesotan, I honestly find it embarrassing that we, as a state with so many resources and impactful community education programming who pride ourselves on education and taking care of one another, are not already offering this to every single qualified household already. We know that an investment in housing stability is an investment in racial equity and that we have the resources to do this. We just need the political will. Fully funding the housing voucher program statewide, now and for the future is the right thing to do. We have all been affected at some level or another by the recent housing crisis, but we can all impact the solution. In Minnesota, we create solutions and are there for one another. Everything in life, education, health, civic duty, everything starts with home. And that's why everyone needs a safety net like this, because we all do better when we all have a home. It's time to bring it home, Minnesota. And with that, I want to welcome Heather.
Hello, my name is Heather Alden, a social worker with St. Paul Public Schools and supervisor of Project Reach, a program which supports all of the students and families in St. Paul Public Schools who are experiencing homelessness, in foster care, or precariously housed. Currently, there are nearly 1,000 students that are identified as homeless in St. Paul Public Schools. Many of these parents are working one and two jobs. They just had life happen. A car broke down, a house fire, a lost job, underemployment, and they ran out of options. Increased stability for families equals increased stability for students. When families can pay their rent and still have money for food, utilities, and medical expenses, families are able to stay in their homes, participate in their community, and provide stability for their children. Over time, children who have stable housing have increased opportunities for academic attainment and educational growth. Safe, stable, and affordable housing during childhood sets the stage for later success in school. Children are profoundly affected by their environment during key developmental stages. Chaos in their neighborhood, frequent moves, exposure to pollutants, unhealthy conditions inside their home all have a deep and lasting impression. When housing consumes too much of a household's budget, kids don't have enough nutritious food to eat and they're not ready to learn. Teachers see the impact of this every single day. Rental assistance would allow families to have an option to provide housing stability for their children, which increases academic success and decreases incidents where children are falling through the cracks. Rental assistance would ensure that all Minnesota children have a safe and secure place to sleep and give them the stability they need to succeed in school. Rental assistance could help reduce racial inequities and the shameful housing disparities that hold back our Black, Brown, and Indigenous communities throughout our state. Rental assistance could help communities strengthen by making sure their families can participate in their community and their children can succeed, which will help Minnesotans thrive for generations to come. For those who have lived in poverty and experienced homelessness in their lifetime, this is a trauma. This remains in one story always. That is never an experience a parent would want to repeat for their child. For those who experience homelessness, they know the stress of not having a place to stay, food to eat, fear of safety, lack of access to medical care, and educational stability. The opportunity for a statewide rental assistance opportunity for low-income residents can create an opportunity to forgo that happening to many in Minnesota. This is an opportunity to rewrite the narrative for those who yearn to house themselves and their children safely. Thank you. I now welcome Dr. O'Brien.
Thank you for having me. So I'm Dr. Jana Gowertz O'Brien. I'm a pediatrician and an adolescent medicine physician. I also work at a local youth shelter, and I provide care to youth and young families experiencing homelessness. I am on the executive board of the Minnesota chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics, and then I also lead a lab focusing on the intersection between housing and health. So that's what I'm here to talk about today, and quite frankly, I'm here for the kids and families. On behalf of the Minnesota chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics, representing more than 1,000 pediatricians throughout the state, we are calling on legislative leaders to set generous housing and bonding budget targets so we can end child and youth homelessness, close the gross and desperate racial gaps in housing, and build more homes, because that's what we need, and housing is health. As a pediatrician for children and families experiencing homelessness, I've witnessed firsthand the critical mental and physical health needs of this population, and the life-changing, and in some cases, life-saving impact that housing can have on health. The facts are staggering. 1 in 20 high school students experience homelessness every year in Minnesota, and I see this all the time in my clinic. I'm going to share one story with a young person's permission of a youth that I met when I was working at a school-based health clinic. He came in over and over again with asthma attacks, and he kept not having his albuterol. He's like, I just lost my inhaler. Finally, it took 3 or 4 visits. We're getting to know each other. And he shares that he's been moving from home to home to home, doubling up and sometimes staying on the street with his parent. So the two of them are looking for a place to stay. Of course his asthma is not well controlled. Of course he's having trouble breathing. He's staying on the street. He's staying in places where there's lots of smoke exposure. He's staying in places that aren't safe. And honestly, in going from home to home, I can't blame him. I wouldn't be thinking about my inhaler. I'd be worried about where I was staying and where I was going to leave my head at night and where my siblings and where my parent would too. Luckily, there's a good end to this story, which is that he got connected with housing. And fortunately, over the subsequent 2 years in that program, I got to know him. He started to thrive academically. His mental health improved. And not surprisingly, his asthma improved too, right? Because housing is health. He is not alone. We could fill 20 buses with 11th graders in Minnesota who've been homeless without a family member by their side, and we can fill even more with young people who are living with their families. So this is a huge issue for health, a health issue in Minnesota. A disproportionate of youth experiencing homelessness are BIPOC. A disproportionate of youth experiencing homelessness are LGBTQ youth. And we know that young people who've been living on the margins and experiencing oppression and discrimination throughout their lives experience poor health outcomes to begin with because of that oppression and marginalization. The experiences of homelessness only compounds and exacerbates those disparities. So the time to act is now. We need to build sustainable housing solutions. And with your support and leadership, we can ensure that all children, youth, and families have a safe, stable, and healthy place to lay their head at night. So the Minnesota AAP stands in strong support of setting generous housing and bonding budget targets. We can end youth and family homelessness today. In the next 10 to 20 years, this is the first step. We can close the racial gaps in housing that I see every day in my practice, and we need to build more homes or else we won't be able to do it. An investment in housing is an investment in health, so thanks for this investment. I'm going to welcome Assistant Majority Leader Murphy.
Where are you?
Oh, right
here.
Yes.
There you are.
You are a hard act to follow.
I'll stand in your spot.
My name is Erin Murphy. I serve in the Minnesota Senate. I'm a registered nurse and assistant leader in the Minnesota Senate. And I am here proudly standing with my colleagues today to talk about why it is time for us to take on this issue once and for all. You've heard very compelling testimony. We know that housing is in a crisis state, and it has been for many, many years. This is not a new issue for us. I will tell you that I know one thing well, and that is Minnesotans. I know them across the state. And when a Minnesotan faces a challenge for their community, for their family, or for themselves, they do the thing we say. They roll up their sleeves, and they get to work, and they solve that problem. And Minnesotans should expect nothing less from the people who elect them, to represent them, and to do our work to build their future. This issue is due its moment. Minnesotans sent us here to solve the chronic problems that we face, and right now we are facing a once-in-a-generation moment to meet this problem and solve it for the people of Minnesota. I want to do that with Senator Port, with Representative Howard, and with everybody who has spoken here. It's time for us to go big so people can go home. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm House Majority Leader Jamie Long, and I don't think it is any exaggeration, as you've heard up here today, that we are in an affordable housing crisis in the state of Minnesota, and that the crisis has only gotten worse over time. We have over 500,000 residents in Minnesota who can't afford their rent because they are paying more than 30% of their household income and rent. That's not a state that any of us want to live in, and that's not a state that we have to live in, because we have the ability, we have the resources to step up and make a historic difference in affordable housing in our state. We've heard today that affordable housing is about economic opportunity. It's about establishing, as Representative Agbaje said, building wealth when you are able to own a home, having the opportunity to get a job when you are in stable housing. It's about education. It's about making sure that we have children who can go to school who aren't homeless. We know that kids who are homeless don't learn well. We know that kids who are unstable aren't able to focus on their homework. And we know that affordable housing is about healthcare, and that if you aren't able to have a stable home if you are homeless, then you are going to have worse health outcomes. So we have all of the reasons in the world to act, and I am so proud of the package that has been pulled together today by our House and Senate chairs to do this. I talked last week to Minneapolis Public Housing, They mentioned that the wait list for getting rental assistance, if a spot opened up today, you would have to have been on the list about 20 years ago to be able to get access to rental assistance in Minnesota. We know that that isn't right. We have to be able to provide the help that folks need to be able to afford their rents. We have 75% of folks who want rental assistance aren't able to get it right now in Minnesota. So that's one part of this package. We're also going to be moving another part of this package tomorrow on the House floor. Representative Heather Keeler was here earlier, and we'll be taking up her package on homelessness. So we have a lot of work to do, and we'll be starting this week in the Minnesota House. And with that, we'll open it up for questions.
Can you go through a little bit about the plans of the package and maybe some of the dollar amounts you guys think should be devoted to each of them? And then the second part is how much of it will be kind of a surplus money that you're spending now and how much might be ongoing? Do you have any ongoing funding sources?
We sure do. Yeah. Yes. Mike and I can take this. Overall, it's what we're proposing is a $3 billion package. $1 billion in investments through housing infrastructure bonds and GO bonds to build supply. $1 billion in one-time money to address the housing challenges across the spectrum. That's from preventing homelessness through emergency rental assistance, closing the homeownership gap, investments in manufactured housing, things, it sort of spreads across programs there. And then $1 billion in ongoing structural investments so that we can carry our vision through to really build a state that prioritizes housing. And that, as we've been talking about, our plan is to end child homelessness, which will mean that we need to stand up a state-based rental assistance program for families with children.
So what we're proposing on the state-based voucher is to ensure that
every family at 30% AMI or below with a minor child receives a state-based housing voucher. That's about 40,000 families across the state, and that would cost roughly $300 to $350 million per year. And just on that point, when we do this, this will be the most transformational thing we've done to end childhood poverty in the state's history. If every single low-income family has access to housing stability, the ripple benefits are really tough to quantify.
So if we're looking at $350 of that is rent assistance. What are the other pieces that make up that billion that we're spending every couple of years?
Yeah, so a big part of that we're talking about is continued down payment assistance. We have a shameful homeownership gap in this state between black families and white families. And so our first-generation homebuyer program, but also other targeted programs that help to educate, get you creditworthy, all of those pieces go into that. It's a thing that we have underfunded for decades. And as we are talking about investing $1 billion into supply, which we desperately need, we need to make sure people are ready to be able to step into those homes. So that's another one of the big pieces of it.
Would you envision some of the other housing agencies sharing their waiting list with the state, or would the state create its own application process and waiting list?
Part of the plan is the notion that right now one in four that do qualify, there's one in four that qualify for a Section 8 that get the voucher. So those folks, this would be for folks that qualify but aren't getting it. So, and the administration will be from our public housing authorities that are already administering Section 8. And that's intentional so that we can make sure that Section 8 works well in coordination with this.
Do you have the votes necessary to pass $1 billion in bonds related to housing and infrastructure?
So for housing infrastructure bonds, that does require just a straight up and down vote, different than general obligation bonds. Although I will say, in the past, housing infrastructure bonds has been bipartisan because we face statewide housing challenges all across the state. And housing infrastructure bonds has been an incredible tool to help build housing that, but for that investment, would not be built. Especially in greater Minnesota, the private market is broken. Housing that meets the needs of those communities is not being built and will not be built without public investment. And so I would hope that we could have bipartisan support.
And I'll just add to that piece that there are companies across Minnesota, particularly in Greater Minnesota, who want to grow, who are telling their communities, we want to grow, we want to hire more people, and there's no housing available in this community. They have been great partners with those communities to help build supply when they can, but the state has an obligation here to make sure that we have the opportunity to make sure that communities all across Minnesota have the ability to grow as people want to stay in these communities, they want to raise their families there, and right now they're leaving because there's no housing.
How much of those bonds, it says that you are using, you do want to use some general obligation bonds, so how much of that billion would be in general obligation?
It's $750 million in housing infrastructure bonds and $250 million in general obligation bonds, I think, and that is particularly because Public Housing Authority uses those GO bonds. That's why it's split that way.
The Walz administration has proposed a much smaller version of rent assistance. How are you talking with them about this idea right now, and what do you think that negotiation might look like in the end?
We have had continued conversations and a really good partnership with the administration, share values. As we mentioned, one of the governor's main policy planks is to end childhood poverty. I would argue you cannot end childhood poverty unless you end childhood homelessness. And I think this proposal is the boldest and most necessary to do it. We've worked with them in sort of crafting the policy behind it, and that's been a really productive process. And so, but it does require a greater permanent ongoing investment. And we think that where there is a gap between the governor's budget and hopefully what the House and Senate budgets look like.
I think we can take one more question. The Senate has, we have floor.
Is there some rumbling about a possible constitutional amendment to do affordable housing or to do housing support?
Yeah, there's ongoing conversations about that, and an outside group is working on that, and Mike and I are in conversations with them. I think the thing that we all agree with is there needs to be dedicated funding for housing. This is a long-term investment that we have to continue to make. As Mike said, that one tablespoon out of a gallon of water in our budget is not meeting the needs of Minnesotans. We need to invest more. So we are open to dedicated revenue source. We're open to ongoing spending in the budget. But at this point, we kind of believe that all options need to be on the table. This is a crisis Minnesotans are asking us to help with and to invest in, and we have that obligation. Thank you all for coming.
Thank you.
Great work.
Nice job.
Thank you. You too. All right, I got to get to the floor.